I'm Charlie Sohn, a screenwriter and journalist.
I'm Agnes Reese, a pop singer and songwriter.
And this is Mysteries of the Euroverse,
live edition.
This week, we're reviewing the songs from Belgium, Ireland, Georgia, Israel, Latvia, Albania, Denmark, Portugal, Malta, and Italy.
And by the end of these four live episodes, we're crowning New York City's best Eurovision song for 2024, based entirely on your votes.
We take a look behind the scenes at all the scandal songs and queens. So come along as we traverse all the mysteries of the Euroverse.
So we are back for our third live episode of Mysteries of the Euroverse. Cheers, girl.
Cheers. It was another amazing night at the spot, and we went through our third round of songs for this year's Eurovision, third out of four, so only one night left after today.
I know. Get excited. Come out to the spot. Thursday, April 18th at 8 p.m., it's going to be our final live. And these have been really fun. The episode we're going to share with you this week features Douglas Lyons, who is a Broadway playwright. He wrote Chicken and Biscuits, which was on Broadway last season. And now he is a television writer as well, writing for Apple TV's Fraggle Rock.
And this week, we are also showing you two interviews with Eurovision 2024 artists. We have Sara Bonici representing Malta with Loop, and we have Yolanda representing Portugal with Grito.
Yeah, I thought both artists were so thoughtful about their music and what they're trying to do with their Eurovision 2024 performance. I just had such a great time talking to both of them, and I think our listeners are going to enjoy what they had to say as well.
I could not agree more. But with that, I think we should throw it over to the show.
Let's do it, girl.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay. Hello, everyone. And welcome to another Mysteries of the Euroverse Live.
We have a very, very special guest this week. Douglas Lyons is a Broadway playwright. So I think we should welcome Douglas to the stage.
Yes. Thank you for having me. But there is an empty chair. So
yes.
We got to fill it.
For Elisha, happy Passover, everybody.
Oh my gosh. So once again, we are turning to the audience to look for a volunteer.
Oh my God.
Javier, come up to the stage. Now, Javier, tell us your coming to Eurovision experience.
I truly believe that if you grab any like 13-year-old like gay boy in Venezuela and put him in front of Eurovision on a Saturday afternoon, he'll be obsessed for the rest of his life. So that was my story. I was flipping the channels. We were lucky enough to get Radio Televisión Española. And
Oh my God, classy.
Yes.
Did you have like a satellite dish?
Yeah, I know. And so I was flipping the channels and I saw a beautiful lady in a gorgeous gown. And I said, who is that? And it was Shiri Maimon from Israel in 2005.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm still watching to this day.
So should we get to the songs?
I think we should get to the songs.
I love it.
So first up, we have Belgium. This is Musti with Before the Party's Over. Now, a fun fact about Musti is he was a judge on Drag Race Belgique. That's Belgium for... were you about to translate it?
I was actually just going to ask you what it meant.
He has described the song as pop with a dark edge.
Are you still playing the game?
He sounds like Adam Lambert to me.
Just takes forever. Also,
do you feel like the song finishes before the party is over?
I don't think the party ever started.
Seems to be really high up, like on scoreboards and odds, but it just it's really slow.
Okay. Fair. Javier is definitely the Simon Cowell of...
He has very nice arms.
Yes.
Great.
Which he is kind enough to show off.
Yeah, I like the aesthetic. I'll take the aesthetic, but it didn't make me pop my puss. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like wanted to pop, and I was like, oh, you know what I mean?
Right.
But hopefully some puss will be popped tonight. And maybe the person to do that is Bambi Thug. Yeah. Who is representing Ireland with... Yes. With Doomsday Blues. Now... Bambi Thug is non-binary. They refer to their style of music as Ouija pop. Their debut single, Birthday, the video for it, featured Bambi Thug naked while eating cake from between their legs. I know, it's pretty great. You will not be surprised that right-wing Irish politicians have called them satanic, but... Eurovision icon Johnny Logan, who has won the contest twice as an artist and three times, including his songwriting, thinks that this is a winner for Ireland.
I will say, I want to give credit to Ireland for trying something different because in the past 20 years, they've just been so corny.
Yes.
And this is actually at least interesting.
Yes.
So I got to give it to them for that because at least they're trying something.
I feel like this is the way my parents compliment something they don't like. And he has nothing more to say. Douglas.
I gave it eights across the board.
Hell yeah!
There's a bop to it. My, like, bussy was activated a little. And there's a point of view as an artist, which I really appreciate. It's not bland.
We are moving to Georgia. Nuza Butsaladze, she was on last year's American Idol. Season 23, only as Nuza, because... I think she was worried about Americans' pronunciation of Buzaladze. She was on The Voice of Turkey, and she was coached by Eurovision icon, Turkish singer Hadis, Domtek Tek, for those who are familiar with that song.
All right.
So, Nuza, take it away with Firefighter. Now you know, like, if you get a fire in your apartment, you just turn on the sink and you dance in the water.
I will say, when I have a fire in my apartment, I do just shout, put out the fire, put out the fire, put out the fire.
I gave her a 9 for the routine.
Great.
Yes.
I really appreciated the Sweeney Todd revival choreography on the floor.
Yeah.
The song was fine. She's talented. Okay.
She is a great dancer.
Yes.
You can tell that she can dance. What are you really bringing to the table except for gowns, beautiful gowns?
I did know this when I called on Javier to come up here. This is just going to allow us to look like much better people than we actually are. So,
thank you.
So now we are coming to Israel, whose song Hurricane is sung by Eden Golan. Israel's participation in Eurovision this year is the center of a lot of controversy because of the war in Gaza. Two drafts of the song were initially rejected by Eurovision because of references to the October 7th attacks. Eden Golan actually is Russian. She moved to Israel after facing anti-Semitism in Russia. Baby, bro.
I like the voice. The routine was cool. The song felt, You named it Hurricane. Is that original?
It was originally called October Rain, which was more specific.
She's blending in the back for me.
I've seen some of her live performances. She's a great singer. The song is generic. I wish her good luck.
Oh my God, you actually might be my parents. I don't even...
We're going to move on to Latvia. This is Dons with Hollow. And he is one of the most popular singers in Latvia, having won the Latvian Music Recording Awards Top Radio Hit Award 8 times for most played song. It's killing.
I gave him a high five across the board.
Oh, so motivational.
It's a cute ballad. It got no reaction from anyone in here.
Yeah.
Which I think is very telling.
I will say, for the people listening to this at home, you should really switch to the YouTube video, because you are missing half of this podcast if you don't see Javier's facial reactions to... So we are going to move to Albania. So the song is Titan. The artist is Bessa. Now, Albania, their first entry finished 7th in the grand final. It took until 2012 for them to beat that result. So it's been a bumpy road for our friends in Albania. I wonder if Bessa will be able to turn things around.
I love that she's serving Statue of Liberty, New York City, represent.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's a cute song. There were more interesting songs in that national final.
Really beautiful gown. The headpiece was from Six, the musical.
Yes. Well, you gotta reuse those costume pieces. Yeah, otherwise, they just get thrown out.
I appreciate her presence.
Lovely.
Yes. The lowest scores I've ever had on this board, by the way. Yeah.
Oh my God, we have even more audience participation than we thought. Yes.
So the thing that is about this song, they changed the song to be English. And I have to tell you, it's actually very different.
Will is saying the problem with this song is the Albanian language. It's horrible. We are going to move on to Denmark. This is Saba with the song Sand. Now, Saba started off as a model and entrepreneur in teeth whitening products. She then replaced her pregnant sister in the role of Dion for the premiere of the musical Hair. Now she's represented Denmark in Eurovision.
That's one of the best hooks we've heard all night, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm highest song rating thus far.
Yes.
It's a pretty well thought out pop song.
Yeah.
So like, you know, they're thinking about like, how am I going to catch you? Like right before the chorus. And then how are we going to make it impactful? You know, have her scream sand. Yeah, I want to listen to that. And then I think she can do pretty well if they elevate their staging a little bit more, which is not something that Denmark's particularly good at.
Once again, Javier, the Simon Cowell of Mysteries of the Universe. Okay, so we are going to move to Portugal. This is Yolanda. Her song Grito means scream. Yolanda is very careful to say, this is not a scream for help. This is a scream to be heard. No me engano, no, no. Isso tudo tamanho. Ainda lembro quando era pequeno, eu sonhava primeiro. Passos largos presa na partida. Hoje eu largo aquilo que me deixou ferida.
mi plesva štela majka fa sodija na širdeno.
I love this.
I'm so glad we agree on this because your cutting words applied to a song that I love would have been too much.
No. No, I absolutely love this. I think that Portugal, even though they don't have the best track record, they send these kind of like indie sounding songs that are just really interesting. Yeah. And I think they do it. They do that really well. Yeah. We're going to send you whatever we like. And we hope you like it too. When you think about Portuguese music genres like Fado, you're thinking about how they're like trying to convey a sense of pain. And I think she does that so well.
Javier, you set up our interview perfectly because we do talk a fair amount about the influence of, emotionally, the influence of Fado on Yolanda's music, even if she lives in a more pop place.
I'm not entirely sure how she's going to do in an all-televote semifinal.
Right.
Because I don't think this is as musically accessible as something like Denmark, but I want her to do well.
The voice is the best of the night, I think.
Yeah, great.
Because there's
voice.
Some like butter in there to put on the bread. You know what I mean?
Oh, hell yeah. So pussy is popping.
Pussy was vibrating.
Oh, okay. All right, close. Oh. That's good.
Not popping.
Not okay. A full pop.
It wasn't popping because the song didn't have a hook.
This is the thing that the song for me is like, say you watch the competition, it's not going to be the song you're going to necessarily be able to just sing as you walk away. I find it captivating.
If you think about an evening that has 26 songs in it, right? And most of them are these sort of like epic war drums in the chorus songs. And then you get a number that's different. I mean, this is Portugal's last win, right? With Salvador Sobral. If you can stand out, if you can contrast yourself to what most of the night is, I think you become memorable, even if there is not a strong hook to the song.
She really understood how to stage a number like this.
I do like dancers whose faces are covered. Like, the less you can see as a dancer, the more I'm going to be impressed with what you're doing.
So with that, we're going to move over to Malta. This is Sara Bonici with the song Loop. Now, she has competed twice in Malta's selection for Junior Eurovision. Now, for people who are not super familiar with Eurovision, and if you've seen 30 Rock, there's like a sketch where they have like an American Idol-style competition for children.
Got Singing!
That's yes. Right, America's Kids Got Singing. And if you thought that was insane, it exists with millions of viewers, and it's called Junior Eurovision.
Don't you tell me I'm your addiction. Obvious you'd end up like this. Not my fault that you got me on. I'm a man but the feather that things on. I'm a tease and I'll catch you loving when I move in your head all night. You got me on loop.
I would love to meet the costume designer. I have questions about the backup dancer's look. What was the, like, turtleneck foreskin around their neck? What was that?
They're European.
Yeah.
Okay, girl. Okay. The song popped the puss. I like the song. It got a 10. The overall got a 10. I like her a lot. I was into it. Were you into it? I'm afraid to give you the microphone.
Oh my God. I'm so glad we have a chaperone over there for Javier because
No. I'm just joking. I actually like this. I think she has really good stage presence and she's a great dancer. She has a great routine. And I think that Malta's good at that too. They're good at like putting on a show, which is great. And I think they'll do that. They'll do well in that regard. Her vocals are a little bit shaky there.
They were upside down. Of course they were shaking.
The moment where they lift her up and she's still singing,
it's
I was
amazing.
Like, who the hell is this choreographer?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here?
Also,
like,
I'm really curious what the hazard pay is for those dancers. Because when she climbs up their backs with stiletto heels.
No. Are you kidding me? They paid for that privilege. So we are moving to our final song of the evening. This is Italy. Is this a favorite? It might be. Angelina Mango is a huge star. La Noia reached number 4 on the Italian singles chart and has been certified double platinum. The song is produced by Dardust, who, if you listened to our interview with Tali last week, also wrote and produced her song, Fighter, and produced Soldi, Mahmood's song, which Eurovision fans will know well. Senza soffrire, non c'è croce più grande, non ci resta che ridere in queste notti bruciate. Una corona di spine sarà il dress code per la mia festa. Ah, è la cumbia della noia. All right.
There's an actual build to the song. And she looks great. She sounds great. I dig it. I like it. That's a nice performance.
I think there's something kind of amazing about Lanoia in that, like, you know, some of the songs that we've watched tonight have maybe felt a little bit like you've heard them before, but then you go too far away from that center and there's nothing to grab onto. I think there's something amazing about that Lanoia hook with the whatever, like, is that a synth? I don't even know. But I think it's such a cool song.
This is my favorite to win this year.
I did watch Sanremo, which is the competition to select Italy's entrant, with Javier. And Javier had given up on her winning, and there was this straight guy that was like doing really well in the odds. And I turned to Javier and I said, "Don't give up now." And I was right, Javier.
We should say thank you and give a big round of applause to our two guests, Douglas Lyons, descending from Broadway briefly to join us in this little bar. And Javier. For those of you who are listening to the recorded version, Javier said, ascending from hell.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is quite a journey, so thank you for visiting us.
Okay, so as promised, here's our interview with Sarah Bonici, representing Malta, and Yolanda, representing Portugal.
And those are going to be followed by a very special musical performance. But you'll have to wait until we're through the interviews to hear more. Yolanda, thank you so much for joining us. So I think we just wanted to start with, what was your relationship to Eurovision like growing up?
I started seeing Eurovision around 2008 with the Senhora do Mar, with Vânia Fernandes. That was the moment that I remember, like, most vivid moment of Eurovision. We didn't send anyone from Portugal for a couple of years, I think. And then we had a revamp of the festival. And then I started seeing more accurately. I remember imagining what would it be if I could be in her position. She was my singing teacher for a year. Yeah, so it was crazy.
When you were younger, did you have, outside of Eurovision, like, musical idols who you looked to? And now, who are you influenced by as an artist?
Like, I think growing up, I had a lot of traditional Portuguese groups that I was paying attention to. Obviously, the fado situation was something that I had a lot in my mind. I didn't want to become a fado singer, but my mom would listen to a lot of fado, my dad as well. And I used to play in this traditional Portuguese music groups, playing like some traditional instruments. So I think that kind of paved the way for my creations. But I think since I was like, I don't know, 13, 12, I used to listen to all of the pop artists like Rihanna, Shakira, all of those big artists, Britney. I don't exactly have a preferred style. I like hip hop, I like pop, I like a lot of flamenco as well. I like to mixture between contemporary, electronic. I think that's how you create like good songs, I guess.
It's amazing that you mentioned fado, because like your EP, the sort of sense of like longing and like complicated love.
Oh, you heard it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Nice.
Of course. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's really
Thank
beautiful.
You. Vai, vai, eu sinto calor dentro. Sai, sai, que te
on some fundamental level, like, feels very Portuguese to me.
Definitely. And you have that long-lasting feeling of, like, hope and yes. getting reunited with a person. In that case, I'm talking about, like, a love story that ended, actually. It ended well, but I wanted to, like, express all the different phases of love. I don't remember exactly a moment where I started to sound a bit like Fado, but definitely there's something in the vocals or maybe the cadences and the melodies that I use that resembles that. But it was not on purpose, and it's really cool to live between these vibes because they definitely resonate in me. Basically, it was a relationship that I lived actually like 5 years before I wrote the EP, so it was not something that I was living in a moment. I was writing something very true to myself, and it was something that I was always thinking. So the relationship kept on being present in my mind at the time. So I thought, okay, I need to take this out of my brain very soon because it's out of my heart. Why is not out of my brain? Why am I still thinking about this? I really wanted to give it a moment of being like forever in the world, I guess. It's not exactly like a homage to it, but it was a beautiful relationship. So I thought, okay, maybe I can leave it in the world in the most beautiful way I can.
Bringing yourself back to those moments, was that difficult at all?
It was difficult because some of the songs were already written. So I had like verses, I had choruses. I was doing a puzzle with everything, and I wanted to chronologically make sense. Sometimes I wanted to talk about a specific feeling, and I had to kind of go back to the feeling that I felt back then. And that's a complicated process. How can I go back at that moment and take out everything in the most beautiful way possible, or in the most ugly way possible? Because sometimes, like, music is not about just like beauty. Sometimes those feelings are difficult, definitely, to take out of yourself or to pull them back, because sometimes they're not there anymore and you have to not pretend, but I think imagine them being there again.
Can you talk about how finding your voice as a songwriter helped you find your actual voice as a performer?
I started being a singer in bars and pubs and etc., singing other songs, and I not struggled, but it was something on my mind all the time. When I was singing other songs, I was not exactly doing their versions. I was doing my versions all the time. But when I start writing my songs, that's when you understand exactly what you want to do at that moment, obviously, because this is constantly changing and we're constantly like evolving or going back to find something we got lost in the past, or we want to revive that moment. It's definitely, for me, an ongoing process.
You're now in Eurovision with Brito. Mm-hmm. So carefully, aviso quando lá chegar. You've talked about that as kind of a culmination of the work that you did on your EP in a certain way.
I didn't exactly do a song for Eurovision. I brought something that spoke true to me and to my artistry, because obviously I will, after Eurovision, continue to be an artist. It's like the biggest thing I've ever done, definitely. And it will be probably the biggest thing I will do for a couple of years. But you should bring something that speaks to you, and not exactly something that is made for a specific contest or show or platform, because you're speaking as an artist, you're not speaking as a machine or as a robot. I wanted to have something that could be so true to myself that I would defend for the rest of my life with a lot of strength.
Can you talk specifically about the inspiration for the song and what caused you to take your mental health more seriously?
I was living this kind of phase where I didn't want to write about love. I was sick of writing about love. And I was going through that journey of thinking, what am I doing in this world? So I guess it's a song that talks about their inner light that you still have, but sometimes it's kind of covered by the shadows of people that don't want you, because you kind of lay down in your bed alone. Even if you are with someone, you fall asleep alone, you die alone, you wake up alone. And we should feel comfortable within our bodies, and we should accept our differences. So I guess this is me trying to also accept that I fail, accept that I'm not exactly perfect.
Grito, for those who don't know, means scream. And you described it not as screaming for help, but as screaming to be heard.
I'm not asking for help when I'm screaming. I'm literally like releasing all the energy from years and years of doubting, of not trusting even myself or others' work, especially as a woman. I'm screaming not exactly to say, look, help me. No, I'm not a victim. I'm literally like marking a position, marking a statement.
Your songwriting is so personal. And there's, I would imagine, like kind of a dual purpose to that. It's like one, writing as expression, or almost writing as kind of a personal therapy. And then also this idea of writing as communication, and knowing that probably other people feel these things, putting them out there will hopefully make other people not feel so alone. How do you think about those two impulses?
For me, it's also a process of learning as well, because when I listen to a Beyoncé track from Renaissance, I'm not listening in the same way that I'm listening a Portuguese contemporary song, for example. Obviously, sometimes I think we should decomplicate the songs to get into people's heads more often, because if I was working a 9-to-5 job, I don't want to go out of my job and listen to something very complicated, maybe. And I'm going to listen to something more simple. It's always a matter of being true to what you want to do, and not exactly like trying to map out different ideas because you want to reach something.
Now, Grito was recorded at your grandparents' house.
Can you talk about a lot of things. You've been studying it. I'm loving it. Somebody should make you make more money. If you need, I can make the conversation for you.
Amazing.
You're now representing us.
Yes, I can do
it. You're our agent.
We go, Magnus. I obviously cut it.
No, you do not have to apologize for complimenting us. So
okay, I'll continue doing it.
But yeah, no, so you recorded the song at your grandparents' house.
Well, my grandparents, I've lost them when I was 12 or 13. They were very hardworking people. My grandfather built his own house with his own hands. I was in my early years house, playing with my dolls and my cars and everything, and just like living a child's life, super happy in this little village with no one. I think probably like 100 people live there, 200, I'm not sure, maybe less.
There's something really amazing and beautiful, I think, about the sort of juxtaposition between writing it in such an intimate place, something that's very personal, and then putting it on literally the biggest stage in the whole world.
I don't know what my grandparents would think about all of this if they were here. I have my mom's side grandparents, and they lived a lot of this national selection process because I brought them to the studio. It was crazy. I got my granddad to the green room. He was there with me the whole time. I think it was more exciting for him than for me, because I was just worried that he was going to be okay. He was just enjoying it.
Speaking of the national final, the performance and the choreography was so striking. Can you talk about how that all came together?
I don't exactly imagine only the song. I'm also like always imagining a video or a reels or like any aesthetic element. So basically, when I decided to accept the invitation, I thought, okay, I don't want to go alone on stage. I want to go in white, and I want to have my Beyoncé moment, even though I will never dance like Beyoncé, and I made my peace with it. I'm okay with that. It's fine. I accept that Beyoncé dances better than me. Beyoncé, if you're listening to this, I want to have a lesson, at least one.
I will point out, very regular listener.
Exactly. So if you're listening to this, please teach your girl. She wants to learn. We have like 2 days in Portugal, I think, to decide how we're going to send it. So I thought I will be ready, because if this happens, I don't want to be running. I don't like to run. I hate to do my job in a rush, you know, like creative needs time to be creative.
Sort of off of that, you released your debut EP last year. You're going to Eurovision, and then directly after Eurovision, you're doing 2 major concerts in Portugal.
I know.
So every artist we talk to goes, oh my God, preparing for Eurovision is the most intense thing I've ever done. It's so crazy. And then you've got this whole other layer on top of that.
Charlie, it's been crazy. It's been mental. It's been hectic. We're doing 2 major dates. We sold out the first one. You should prepare yourself as an artist and as a person to live more after Eurovision, because Eurovision is definitely that platform. You will definitely meet tons and tons of people, fans, supporters, people that don't like you, people that don't exactly resonate with your song, which they're also necessary, because if we liked all of the same, this would be boring as hell.
This is a question that's mostly just personally for me, because I'm you know, interested in advice.
I'm your girl, Charlie, tell me.
Good. So has the hypnotherapy been helpful?
I actually don't like planes. So basically, I started doing it to kind of heal myself and just enjoy a bit of the plane ride, because I don't love them. I hate them. they're not cool. It's a can in the middle of the air. But basically, like, I think it helps with concentrating yourself in the right mindset and etc. But there's tons and tons of different therapy. You have psychotherapy. I'm still going to start psychotherapy sooner or later. Not exactly to heal any specific trauma, but just like to get to know myself better. Because that's also cool. Therapy, it's for everyone.
There's been this sort of like old idea in Eurovision that songs in English tend to do better because more of the audience understands the language. So there are artists who talk about feeling a certain pressure to submit songs in English. For Grito, was that ever a question in your mind?
Well, to be honest, no. I love my language. I love Portuguese, and I think I communicate better in Portuguese. And I've tried to write English back when I was in London, and it was not exactly like so true to myself. I was forcing it. Music is the feeling you're conveying in the performance, is also the melodies, is also the chords. The tension in the chords speak differently from one to another. If there's a major chord, it's going to be very different from a diminished chord that is more tense. And I know my song, for example, has a lot of tense notes, and it's not that difficult to understand that I'm talking about something strong. The message is strong.
I think also you look at Portuguese success. It's not like Salvador Sobral probably didn't engineer.
Oh, I'm so sure he never thought about that. We should allow like all of those differences, because one strategy is not the winning strategy. Everything can happen, and especially in a contest with so many songs, with so many styles. There's a lot of angles to approach Eurovision. For me, the angle is obviously enjoying it as much as I can and just fight for my voice to be heard.
You recently attended your first pre-party.
I was not expecting that it was so big. I think it was the first time I was like so close to something as Eurovision is going to be. You know what I mean? Like a warm-up of what's going to happen there times 100, obviously, because it's going to be much bigger, I know. But it's just really cool to just like live that experience for a couple of days priorly to Eurovision.
We keep hoping they're going to bring a pre-party to New York.
Please invite me and I will go on that plane forever and ever and ever.
I will say each of us has a guest room.
Yes.
That's right.
Period.
We will be in Malmo, so we
can do that. You find me, please. You find me.
We have our great representative now.
Yeah, well, that's true. We do have a new manager, so.
Exactly.
It's you.
If you need anything, just talk with me and I will manage you guys.
Someone needs to manage us in general. Yolanda, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
This has been an absolutely delightful conversation, so thank you so much for your time.
Euroverse.
We are here with Sarah Bonici, who will represent Malta at Eurovision with Loop. Sarah, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. We just wanted to start off by asking what your relationship to Eurovision was growing up. When did you start watching the contest?
So I actually do not recall an exact time when I started watching Eurovision, because I always remember myself as a young kid watching Eurovision. As a family, it was always a yearly event. We all get together, we watch Eurovision, and we try to predict who's going to make it through or not. So now that I am actually one of the competing artists, it's actually insane, incredible.
Who were your idols growing up? Who were the artists that inspired you?
I think Helena Paparizou, with her entry in Eurovision, was actually one of them. I always imagine myself doing Eurovision and doing it with a sort of choreo-based song like Loop, and like obviously her song back then. So I think she was a great inspiration. But growing up, I used to love watching Jennifer Lopez. And that can also, I think, be seen from Loop, because it's sort of heavily influenced as well from her. But not only, I love Beyoncé. And recently, I'm also very much into Dua Lipa. I really like her new style and the direction she's heading.
How did you come to music growing up? And when was it that you knew that you wanted to be a performer?
It always came very, very natural to me. I have photos of myself, like 3 years of age, where I was like with the mic singing at home. So it was something which I was always passionate about and which came like really natural to me. also my mom sings and plays the guitar. My dad plays the piano. My uncle plays the guitar and sings. My other uncle plays the bass. So we're a very musical family. And growing up, we're always putting up these, even with my cousins, these small shows to our family. So like music has always been like a very, very important part of my life. There was never a particular time where I knew I want to become an artist, a singer, a performer.
You also have a master's in accounting. So can you talk about that decision and how you balance that with your music career?
So I always wanted to do music. I worked as an accountant for 2 years. There was a time where I was trying to juggle accounting and also music, which in all honesty was not easy. As a person, I like to like try to give my 100% in everything I do. That's why then I decided to choose and focus on what really matters and what I am really and truly deep inside passionate about, which is definitely music.
You were mentored by Miriam Christine, who Eurovision fans will know from 1996 In a Singer's Heart. So can you talk about that relationship and what you learned from her?
Yes, she was my first vocal coach, and she was the first person that actually pushed me to start actually singing. So I started choir lessons with Miriam Christine, so I was part of her choir. And then she had encouraged my mom, sort of told her that maybe I should start taking singing lessons individually. And that's what I did. And I was mentored by her for quite a long time. I did Junior Eurovision as well under her direction, and she was always a great inspiration and a great mentor.
You competed in Malta's Junior Eurovision twice, and you actually went to Junior Eurovision as part of Malta's act in 2010.
They were amazing experiences. The first experience when I competed in Malta, I came third back then with the Mambo song, and it was such a big thing for me. I had only started singing like a few months before, so that was like insane at that age. Then the year after, I competed again and ended up as well going to Belarus with the Maltese delegation with Nicola Zopardi as a backup singer and dancer, which was an amazing experience. I recall having parties every day, and as a young kid, we used to love that and feeling like a superstar at the age of 11.
You've performed in a ton of competitions, the Trixie Festival in Bulgaria, the Carpathian Star Festival in Romania, the Star is Born Festival in Hungary, Te Amo Festival in Romania. So a lot of these contests were outside of Malta.
When you go abroad, you meet new people, you experience a different sort of competition. I always struggled with sort of self-belief, and I always found it hard sort of to push myself and believe in myself. So experiences like these, I think growing up, gave me the confidence that I needed to make it to where I am.
And then you were also on X Factor.
I was an X Factor as part of a group. It was a great experience. You make new connections, you learn a lot. You make mistakes and learn from your mistakes. And that also really sort of pushed me as well outside my comfort zone, because it was my first experience in a group.
You released Bandwagon, which has an Amy Winehouse sound. Then you followed up with Breathe Your Love and Il Pina, which was your only non-English release. Can you talk about those three songs and how they came about? And also, as a multilingual songwriter and performer, how do you decide on the language of the song? How do you come to that?
Yes, I think those three songs were actually part of my journey to discovering as well myself as an artist. Bandwagon holds a very close place to my heart. I wrote it together with my vocal coach, Pamela Vedzina. Then Breathe Your Love was a release, which I wrote with Kevin Borch and Simon Grip. And then Il Pinna as well was a Maltese song, which I wrote myself together with Emil and Mark for a local competition, which we ended up winning. I was still finding myself and exploring sort of my sound. But how I decide about the language and all of that, I love my language. I love Maltese, and I love writing in Maltese and creating music in Maltese. And when it comes to Eurovision, however, with the vision I had in mind for the entry this year, I decided to go for a song in English. However, I really hope that one day maybe someone from Malta represents the country with a song in Maltese, because I think that our language is very special, and it's a language to just a few people, so very, very special.
Never Ever comes out in 2023 and marks a departure musically. It's dancier, a bit more clubby, kind of a preview of Loop in a way. Baby, all out. Can you talk about that shift?
Yes, I think Never Ever was the start of who I am as an artist, because I was very much involved in the songwriting. I wrote it with Sean Farrugia. Sort of a stepping stone to Loop. Not the same style, but in the same direction. And like even brand-wise and image-wise when it comes to that. I think Never Ever also really pushed me outside of my comfort zone. It was actually my first experience doing a music video. And my first experience working with the producer and the songwriter on the song, I started working with a sort of different team. So for me, it was the start of a new era, so to speak.
Turning to Eurovision and the national final, in 2022, you competed with Heaven. You bring me heaven on time.
You put me up 200 degrees, boy. I was very much involved in the songwriting of Loop. I'm actually one of the songwriters. I always had my vision in mind throughout and what I wanted from Loop, and sort of led that and directed that to make sure that we have what I am envisioning. Heaven was slightly different. I worked with Aiden, but the song was presented to me. So it's a totally different process, even when it comes to just the songwriting. So even like style-wise and my artistic persona was different.
You touched on the songwriting of Loop. It came out of a songwriting session, right?
Yeah, it came out of a songwriting session, a very relaxed and unplanned, without expectations songwriting session in London. It was with Atticus and Lay and Kevin Lee. It was targeted towards Eurovision, but as I said, I have no expectations whatsoever, just for fun. Still, I had this vision in mind of what I wanted to do. And we actually wrote like a skeleton, a vase of Loop. It was not the only songwriting session that I was doing at the time, but then I ended up choosing Loop. I went back to Malta, worked further on the production with Nicky Magon, and then just a few minutes before the deadline, I was not even sure if I want to submit the song or not. I was at a wedding, and yes, just 15 minutes before the deadline, I went in my car, I had everything ready, just needed to press submit, and I was like doubting myself, saying, should I do this? Should I not? Is it good enough? But the usual sort of overthinking. I'm a huge overthinker. And then I said, yes, I think I need to trust my gut and I'm going to do it. And I did it and ended up winning the whole thing. Then obviously I worked on the revamp with Linnea Deb and Joy Deb as well. So they obviously joined forces, the songwriting. I also worked with John Emile and also Matthew James Borch. And we have a whole list of songwriters involved in Loop, international songwriters.
Eurovision fans will be familiar with Joy and Linnea Deb's work. Mons Selmerlo's Heroes, Sarah Alto's Monsters, Sen Heat's Adrenalina. And actually also this year, they were on Marcus and Martinez's Unforgettable. What was it like working with them?
After winning the national final, we tried to see, you know, how we can sort of improve the product that we already had. We thought Joy could be the ideal producer to work on the revamp. And obviously with Linnea's help, and I went to Sweden and we worked on the revamp. I wanted to improve the quality of the production and also do some minor changes, which improved the song. I listened to certain constructive criticism and we did those minor changes, like slightly amending the lyrics to make them more easy for the listener to understand, and changing a bit the hook. And that was basically the approach. But it was lovely working with the devs. Linnea is a really positive, fun person. And Joy is an extremely creative and talented human being.
Going back to the national finals performance, the choreography is so striking. Can you talk about your relationship to dance? And was it important to you that the number be athletic like that?
It was definitely challenging. I started dancing at the age of 4, but had stopped dancing for 5 years before Eurovision. But it was always sort of my vision to present something which Malta had never presented before. And it was always my dream. As I told you, ever since I saw Helena Paparizou's number way back in Eurovision, I said, this is what I want to do. Even like from inspirations from Jennifer Lopez and Beyonce growing up, that's exactly what I wanted to do in the choreography. Obviously, it was challenging. It requires a lot of training and stamina. And obviously, I need to make sure that I'm breathing properly and a lot of training, singing and dancing, running on the treadmill and singing. So it's a lot.
Everyone who goes to the same gym as you got to see the performance of Loop.
Exactly.
What was the experience like of the national final? And what was that feeling like when you found out that you won?
It was insane. I was an underdog. So for me, it was a huge surprise. I couldn't believe it. I was like without words. And if you see my reaction, I was a bit sort of lost and sort of not knowing what had just happened. And it took me a while, you know.
As Malmo is approaching, what have the preparations been like?
I didn't stop since the national final. Obviously, the performance in Malmo is just the end of it all. In reality, there's a lot of work that goes behind the scenes. So when it comes to rehearsing, preparing myself vocally, training physically to make sure that I am fit to go on stage, and outfits and all of those preparations relating to the performance. And then obviously certain obligations required by EBU, other appearances on TVs. It is quite hectic. Like, I'm all the time busy and not stopping. As you can see, I'm in the middle of the road right now from one thing to another, trying to slot in things and waste as little time as possible. But it's been great. I feel so grateful to be given this opportunity to represent my country, to perform on such a big stage and do this, literally.
Wrapping up, what are you most looking forward to about performing on the Eurovision stage? What's the thing that has you most nervous?
I think the most nervous is the fact that I'm opening the show. That is sort of nerve-wracking, but very exciting at the same time. I was so happy that we were chosen to open the show, because opening, obviously, such a great show is insane. And I feel a certain sense of responsibility, though. And I am nervous, not going to lie. But what I'm most excited about, I think, is just going on the stage and singing my heart out and performing. And music is my life. It's my passion. And being able to share my music and perform to such big audiences was always my dream. And now that I have the opportunity to do it, so I really cannot wait to go on the stage and perform for all of you.
Amazing. And we look forward to seeing it as well. We're going to be in Malmö.
Euroverse.
We have a very special musical performance for you. You may know him from the podcast Mysteries of the Euroverse, Magnus Ries, who will be singing a cover of a Eurovision 2024 song that you have heard tonight.
This is Before the Party's Over, but my version.
I'm sure the kids are all right, but just play it cool. Watch it fade, it's got hurt from time to time. One more drink and now I'm fine. You're the living proof. You're still playing the game of breaking the rules. I can see all the pain. Told us it was paradise, but I barely make it through the night. Do you think about it too? I used to play. Tonight, I got a soul on fire. I'm gonna make moves tonight.
I got a soul on fire before the party is over. 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 Before the party is over.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We got some results for you.
Hell yeah. No, so we are going to announce our third place act of the night. And that is Bambi Thug, Doomsday Blues, representing Ireland.
In second place, we have Denmark, Saba with Sand. Okay, so the winner is Angelina Mango,
Lanoia.
From Italy! We hope we see you back next week for our grand finale.
Oh my God.
I know.
What a Norwegian accent she has.
But until then, happy Eurovision.